know what you're thinking. Did he fire 6 shots or only 5? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I kind of lost track myself. But being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world and would blow your head clean off, you gotta ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky?
Do you feel lucky, punk?
Well, do you, punk? Jeffrey Rosenthal is here with us today to talk about his new book, Knock on Wood, Luck, Chance, and the Meaning of Everything. Jeffrey, thanks for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
So you actually talk about that in the book, that line from that famous Clint Eastwood scene. I mean, actually, I think he kind of does it in a couple of films. He does it. It's sort of a thing with Dirty Harry. Before we dive in, why don't you tell us a little bit about that luck? And did that punk actually, was that punk lucky? You know?
Let's see. As I recall in that movie, he was worried, you know, did Clint Eastwood have an extra bullet or not? And he didn't want to take the chance, so he surrendered. But then it turned out Clint Eastwood did not have an extra bullet, so he could have gotten away with it, but he didn't. But to me, it was just one more saying about how important luck and randomness is in our lives and how things outside our control can have such a big influence.
The best part of that scene is I think Clint is eating a hot dog as he hears the bank being robbed, and he's walking across the street shoveling the hot dog still into his mouth as he pulls his gun out.
Sounds like I run into a real Clint Eastwood fan.
You know what? There was a day. I still am a fan, maybe not so much of his politics, but certainly of his films and his filmmaking, that's for sure. So, Jeffrey, do you believe in luck?
Well, it's funny. I mean, I start the book off by sort of saying, you know, people ask me that, do you believe in luck? And I end up saying it kind of depends what you mean. Luck is one of those words that's a little hard to pin down. So if you just mean, you know, all the random, uncertain things that happen to us that are outside our control and that can have a really big impact for good or for bad, then sure, you know, we all have so much in our lives which is outside our control and can have such a big effect. But then sometimes people are saying, well, you know, is there maybe some supernatural reason for it or some forces or things like astrology and ESP and good luck charms and all this kind of stuff. And that's where I say, well, you know, I don't really believe those things, but I want to keep an open mind, but let's try to think about the evidence and think about why people believe those kind of things.
Yeah, so you know, it's interesting. I've done a lot of work overseas, and I've spent a fair bit of time in Cambodia and gotten to know many people and have friends and so on. And it's interesting around carvings, wood carvings. And I remember taking home an elephant that somebody had carved for me. And I was talking to another friend, another Khmer family, who were quite religious in their own mind and were a little concerned that I was actually taking this elephant home because this elephant, you know, there was a meaning behind it, right? This wasn't just a carved piece of wood.
Right.
This was actually one of those, what would you call it, a totem? You would call it you would never call it a good luck charm in Khmer culture, but this is a religious symbol of a particular sort.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, all sorts of people in all sorts of places believe all sorts of different things, and you've identified an interesting one, but they all boil down to people believing in sort of supernatural or magical forces which have a certain control on all these random luck things. And a lot of people will believe different ones. In the book, I tried to summarize some of them, but I couldn't even begin to scratch the surface because there's so many different things that different people will believe. And, people have a real need for that. They want to say that the luck that happens to us isn't just random and meaningless. It has some purpose, some cause. It depends on all these different, whether objects and other things like that. So people really want to believe those things.
I love how you say, and it's in chapter 22 of the book. By the way, congratulations on the book. It's a marvelous, wonderful read. And I love the crazy subtitle, Luck, Chance, and the Meaning of Everything.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bit of a lofty claim there, I think, Jeffrey.
Well, you know, the publishers need to come up with catchy subtitles, so I let it go with that.
Quote, religion is a tricky subject to approach. Many people are very passionate and sensitive about it and can be offended by beliefs that are different from their own. As the Peanuts comic strip character Linus once wisely noted, there are three things I've learned never to discuss with people: religion, politics, and the Great Pumpkin, close quote. How can you not like a book that has a couple of sentences like that? And that's in a sub part of a chapter titled Lord of the Luck, Religion versus Luck. I'd love to come back to that actually in a couple of minutes. But
sure.
Well, how do you, I mean, you're a statistician.
Yes.
You teach at University of Toronto.
Right.
Why a book on luck? And maybe I'd love to hear what your definition is.
Sure. Well, it sort of started when I'd written a previous book for a general audience called Struck by Lightning, and that was just sort of about probability and randomness in our everyday lives and the kind of things that I think about as a statistician, but how I think they affect everyone, everything from medical tests to election polls to crime statistics and all these different random and probability things out there. And then, you know, the book did well, so I ended up giving talks and doing interviews and so on. And then every once in a while, people would ask that, well, you know, yeah, but do you believe in luck? You know, do you believe in these special forces? And it's like, well, you know, what do you mean exactly? And I would kind of avoid the question for a while. Then I thought, okay, I'm not going to avoid that question anymore. I'm going to try to get into it, but it's not a simple thing to get into. So I think I have to write another book.
So your book, Struck by Lightning, I actually did a tiny bit of research on that very thing for our interview. So maybe you know, and I didn't know you had written that book, but there's a woman who an article I found on The Guardian who's been struck by lightning twice.
Mm.
And I think her name's Beth Peterson, I believe. Anyway, yeah. I mean, what I want to get to, because I guess my background's philosophy, I want to get to, what are we really talking about here? Are we talking about, yeah. you know, is this contingency? Are we talking about choice? Are we talking about being yeah. prepared?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, yeah, it is a hard thing to pin down. And I mean, I start in the book, I talk about like some dictionary definitions, but they don't really help that much. And they'll usually have a couple definitions, which will seem to be almost the opposite. So I end up kind of saying there's sort of two different things people can mean by luck. And one of them is what I sometimes call a dumb luck or a random luck. And
right.
that's just all the things that happen to us, which are outside our control. They happen every day when the bus is late or the boss is in a bad mood, or you win the lottery, or your friend gets sick, or, you know, all these things that happen to us, and they're outside our control. So, you know, they're all luck. Either they're good luck or bad luck. They're things that happen to you. But then there's this second thing, which is I sort of call a magical luck or a forceful luck. And it's this idea that there's sort of things controlling this luck that happens, and there's forces, and whether it's the good luck charms that you mentioned from Cambodia or whatever, or whether it's the you know, people's belief in different causes and powers, and, you know, ESP and astrology and all these different things that people believe, are all in my mind ways to say it's not just random, but, you know, there's some cause, some force, something making it happen. So to me, there's kind of these two different meanings of luck, and they're almost the opposites in the sense that one of them says, well, it's just the randomness. The other one says, no, it's these special powers.
So is there? So if everything's random, is would you say a lesson to be taken from that is there's meaning to be found even in the randomness? Is that something that you would teach, or I mean, I think, you know, and a connected question, frankly, is do you buy lottery tickets?
Those are two kind of different questions. But, yeah, well, meaning is, of course, an interesting thing, and I know a lot of people get meaning from their, you know, their various beliefs and so on. But
yeah.
I do believe, and I do talk about this in the book, that even without resorting to supernatural explanations, there's all sorts of amazing things in the world, and there's people that we can meet, and we can fall in love, and we can do all these exciting things and see all these exciting things. So I feel there's plenty of meaning just in the way that we deal with other humans and with the world around us. As far as the lottery tickets, I actually do not buy standard lottery tickets because I know so well how small the probabilities are. You know, they're one chance in millions and millions, depending on which of the lotteries you're talking about. And a lot of people will believe they're going to win, and that's why so many people buy tickets and why the lotteries make so much money for the government. But why do they believe that? Well, often it's because they don't understand the probabilities, but often it's because they do believe, you know, I feel lucky, or, you know, this other good thing happened to me, so it must be my lucky day, or, you know, my astrological horoscope, you know, says that today is the right day, or people will believe all these things. And I have to tell them, well, I can just look at the actual mathematics of it, and it's extremely unlikely.
You know, my dad was not a mathematician, but he did like numbers, and he was, you know, he liked accounting, and he had a job as a manager at a paper company. But one of the many things I remember about my father is that he would almost condescend towards people who purchased lottery tickets.
Yeah.
Pretty, you know, David, you know, or he'd say to us, you know, family or whatever, David and Stephen, my brother, you know, you got a better chance of being hit by lightning, you know, and people will say, well, somebody's got to win. Harold,
yeah,
that was his name, of course.
Right?
Somebody's got to win, though, Jeffrey, right? It might be me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can sympathize with all of that. I mean, I try to take the more of an open mind. And, in fact, you know, if you think by buying a lottery ticket you're going to have, you know, the fun and excitement of dreaming about what you'll win and, you know, watching the draw and so on, that might be worth a couple of bucks. So I don't
right.
have any problem if you want to
right.
buy a lottery ticket. But on the other hand, if you really think you're going to win, that's when we have to talk about the probabilities involved and how it all works and so on. And, you know, so, you know, in the book, I do try to be open-minded about things while also trying to take a rational approach.
Tell me about, you know, you touch on a subject that I think some of the listeners on this show would be interested in. And I don't know if you knew this or not, but I'm actually standing in for
right.
Drew Marshall. This
yes.
is the the show formerly named as the Drew Marshall Show, now affectionately referred to as the David Peck Show. But
of course.
Anyway, this is my last Saturday, actually, Jeffrey. Oh, it's a sad,
I'm sorry to hear that.
That's right. Yeah. So a couple things I really want to touch on. So I want to talk a little bit. You talk about The Secret and this book and what an impact it had with movie stars. And I know that some of the listeners probably have either read it or are familiar with it. And there's this whole sort of, I don't know. I don't even know what it is, but it's definitely a movement, right, of folks. I mean, it's bordering on, which is something else you really touch on, astrology, you know?
They're kind of similar because, you know, in both cases, it's the case of, you know, believing that there are these certain powers. And in the case of The Secret, people talk about what they call the law of attraction and this idea that if you really think about things and concentrate on them and you really want them, then they'll just magically happen. So in the book, you know, I try to consider that. So I sort of figure that claim can be broken up into two parts, one of which makes perfect sense, which is that if you really want something, and that means that, you know, you work hard and you prepare well and you study well for it and you keep your eyes open for all the opportunities and you try to cash in whenever you have a chance, that is actually a good way to try to become a famous actor and so on. So that makes sense. But then if you believe there's this mystical force that if only you concentrate hard enough, it's going to magically make things come to you, then, you know, there's just no evidence for that. And in fact, I talk in the book about why people might tend to believe those things, even if they're not true, because we tend to notice when it does happen. And if a famous actor says, oh, yeah, I really thought hard about wanting to be an actor and wanting to get this role, and then I got it, so that's amazing, that's great. But what about all the other people who really worked hard to try to become an actor, really studied for the role, really thought about it, really wanted it, but they never got the call?
Yeah, well, it's pretty interesting. I mean, I think you could say, I mean, it's a form of prayer, right? You could say the same thing about prayer, right?
Well, and of course, it's tricky to get into, you know, things of religion, because a lot of times people have a personal faith that they really believe, and it could provide them with great comfort and so on, and provide them maybe with a sense of morality and so on. But then some people will say, you know, there's evidence for you know, the power of prayer, because I prayed that, you know, this thing I lost, I was going to get it back, and then I did get it back. And to that I say, well, yeah, but what about the other times when you lost something but you didn't get it back, so it didn't always work, and we'd expect just by luck that sometimes you'll get it back and sometimes you won't.
Would you be more comfortable with this idea of prayer being just kind of, I don't know, a form of meditation or a conversation? Would you be more okay with that?
Sure. I mean, absolutely. Like, I mean, even though I personally am not religious, but I totally respect it. In fact, I talked in the book some. I had some friends who had, you know, their father died young, and it was very sad for the family.
I remember
and,
the story,
you know, they had a religious ceremony, and it provided them with great comfort, and, you know, I was all for it. I didn't at all want to try to talk them out of it or argue with them at all or anything. So to the extent that it provides people with personal comfort and a sense of meaning and a sense of purpose and maybe some moral guidance, let's say, then that's all great. So it's only when people say, yeah, but here's the evidence for it, then it's like, well, that's something I know a little something about.
You know, is there anything that you believe that you don't have evidence for?
Well, sure. I mean, I think, you know, that comes up sometimes and people, you know, pin me down. It's like, oh, you think it's all scientific.
Right.
You know, it's not.
You're a numbers guy, Jeffrey. Come on.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I try to, and actually in the course of writing this book, I think I became a little bit more open-minded about it in the sense that I have to recognize that, like everyone else, first of all, science can only explain so much, and certainly things involving our feelings and our fears and our hopes and dreams and, you know, the things that happen to us, we can't just say, oh, yeah, that's just a scientific principle. We're often affected in very personal ways. And I mean, I talk in the book a little bit about my own little bits of superstition creeping in. In fact, I have a story about where I made a little friendly bet with a political science professor about the results of the presidential election that elected Trump. And I actually took the side of betting on Trump because he wanted the other side and he gave me odds and stuff. And then when Trump won, I went to bed and I had this feeling it was my fault. You know, it's because I made this bet. Somehow that's what, you know, affected it. And it was karma. And it was, of course, totally ridiculous feeling, didn't make any logical sense, but I had that feeling. So I recognize people are going to have all these needs to have an explanation for things that happen.
I love, you know, my sense is, well, I'm just going to read something from your book. It's in the chapter on astrological luck, and you say, quote, "Of course, it is conceivable that there could be some other force at work besides gravity that science has not yet discovered, but which astrologers have tapped into," close quote. I just find it interesting that, you know, you mentioned a few minutes ago that you, in the course of writing the book, you found yourself a little more open. I would say, you tell me, but scientists don't always strike me as being the most open folk in the world. And yet, in order to discover something, you got to be pretty open. So, and here you're saying, well, hang on a minute, maybe gravity isn't the final answer, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting, and I've never heard anyone put it that way. I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, well, thank you. So with astrology, because, you know, some people, of course, a lot of people who believe in astrology say, oh, it's, you know, the position of the planets when you were born and so on, and it had this big effect. And a lot of people say, well, you know, we know the planets can affect things because of gravity, but that's something we can work out. And, you know, the amount of gravitational pull from another planet on, you know, when this baby's getting born is actually, it works out to be less than the gravitational pull from the doctor who's standing beside the mom who gives birth. So,
right.
So the point is, you know, there's not really any significant gravitational force. So that's not a very good argument. But then, of course, people say, well, maybe it's not gravity, but it could be these other things. So I try to be open-minded. You know, maybe there's some magical force that scientists haven't figured out, but all these astrologers have. But then I do start to look at the evidence, and you know, there really isn't any evidence to support it. And you know, there's been a number of studies that have shown it not to be true.
So. What I think, what I take from it is that there's this sense of openness. That again, I mean, the theme for me, the today's show is this relational theme, and the universe is a pretty relational place. And maybe there's some. Well, I'm pretty sure there's some things out there we haven't discovered yet. And so the idea of being open, I think, is just mm-hmm. refreshing. And I think it's essential to staying sane, you know, it seems to me, because, I mean, the theory of heat, for instance, in the history of science was wrong for how many years? 150 years, maybe?
Right.
Anyway, it just yeah. I find it interesting. Hey, before we let you go, and we barely scratched the surface here, and again, the book is Knock on Wood, Luck, Chance, and the Meaning of Everything, HarperCollins. Get it for those you love for Christmas this year.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's a wonderful read. It's a fun read too.
Thank you.
Tell me about the Atheist's Nightmare.
Right. So that was this video. So you know, as I say, with religion, there's an issue of whether you're just getting sort of your personal faith and comfort, or you're actually trying to prove, here's the proof of the existence of God. And there was one famous video by a guy named Ray Comfort, you may know, and he said that...
Did you hear the laughter in the studio there?
I heard something.
Yeah,
I didn't know
that was
heard,
that was but, laughter, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, so he had a video saying, oh, here's the proof. You know, the banana is proof that there must be a God, because look how amazingly convenient it is. You know, it's got this tab on top that makes it easy to peel, and it fits just right into one hand, and it's even curved so you can eat it just right. And he had this idea that that's the ultimate proof, and therefore that's an atheist nightmare.
Sounds like you're describing a Coke can.
Well, yeah, a little bit. So, you know, I have some responses in the book. I mean, one part of it, of course, is that at least this atheist, I wouldn't call it a nightmare if there's new evidence. I always want to hear about new evidence if
sure,
it's convincing.
Sure.
But so that's one part. But then also, it's really not that convincing evidence. I mean, for one thing, the modern
really?
Banana is actually kind of different than the original bananas because of agricultural engineering. It actually is much more convenient now than it was in nature. But I think more importantly, even if you do think, you know, the ultimate test of whether there's a God is how convenient it is to eat fruit, which is a pretty narrow definition, but
yes.
What about other fruit? You know, I mentioned oranges in the book. Somebody else mentioned
or coconuts. How about the pomegranate? What
yeah,
a useless fruit
coconuts,
that is.
And, so, you know, if you really want to say, you know, God has taken the trouble to make all this fruit nice and convenient for us to eat, well, he kind of forgot about all these other fruits. So
the banana is privileged.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's not going to be, of course, the final argument, and it's not the reason most people do or don't believe in God, but it just illustrates that, you know, just because one thing works out a certain way, you have to take the bigger picture if you're going to decide whether it's evidence.
I actually love, Jeffrey, that you referred to the original banana. I think that should be the title of your next book.
Apparently, the proper way to eat a banana to avoid all the strings in it is actually to peel it from the bottom.
Ah, okay.
That's actually the proper way. So
well, that's
again,
just nowhere near as convenient,
yes.
Tim.
I see, but then there's no tab on it.
That's
so
right.
It,
where's
it,
the tab?
It
What's
the
going
argument?
On around here?
All right, much to discuss about bananas, apparently.
Yes, Jeffrey.
Because it has appeal.
Thank you so much for your time today. What a pleasure chatting with you. The book is Knock on Wood, Luck, Chance, and the Meaning of Everything, Jeffrey Rosenthal. Delightful new book, and also author of Struck by Lightning. So pick it up at your local bookstore, get it online. Jeffrey, thanks for your time today, and we'll look forward to chatting again with you at greater length down the road.
Great, absolutely, anytime, and thank you very much.